Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis, or it could just be nominee controversy martinis today. I'm not even sure they fit into the normal categories, but let's start with the first one, and that's Hillary Clinton. She is doing a bit of damage control. She'd be doing more if it weren't for the remaining martinis today. Hillary Clinton, of course, as we've established a number of times, Jim, desperate to try and at least get somewhere in the ballpark of the millennial turnout for her that Barack Obama has been able to get in the last two election cycles. The numbers are not good on that front. We've talked about that a number of times, including last week, that only 47% of people aged 18 to 34 are definitely planning to vote. She's been trotting Bernie Sanders out there on the campaign trail, trying to get him to convince his former supporters, many of them young people, to get on board with Hillary Clinton. He's been at least dutifully doing his part, if not enthusiastically, I would say. And now it's going to be even harder for him to do that and harder for his people to come on board Hillary Clinton, because thanks to a hacked sound file that was later obtained by the Free Beacon, Hillary Clinton at a fundraiser in February in McLean, Virginia, and this is, of course, still during the competition with Bernie Sanders, was talking about the appeal of Sanders' message to young people, but also why it's a bunch of nonsense. So here's Hillary Clinton, first of all, talking about who Sanders is appealing to.
Some are new to politics completely. They're children of the Great Recession, and they are living in their parents' basement. They feel that they got their education, and the jobs that are available to them are not at all what they envision for themselves. If you're feeling that you're consigned to, you know, being a barista or, you know, some other job that doesn't pay a lot and doesn't have much of a ladder of opportunity attached to it, then the idea that maybe, just maybe, you could be part of a political revolution is pretty appealing.
Then she explains that for the revolution to work, you need to win back the Senate. You need to find a way to win back the House. And she says incremental progress has been the story of her life, and that's how you actually get stuff done. And then she had some more parting comments for the political revolution being pushed by Sanders at the time.
You know, those of us who understand this, who have been experienced, who have worked in it, know that it's a false promise. But I don't think you tell idealistic people, particularly young people, that they bought into a false promise. You try to do the best you can to say, hey, you know, that's his view, that's what he is offering you, but here's another way where actually we can achieve a lot of what we have said starting day one.
So, Jim, what's the more fun part here? Is it the fact that Hillary Clinton thinks about Bernie Sanders supporters what we probably always thought she did, or the fact that she ended up co-opting half his agenda and now is telling those same young people that you can have the free college, we'll retire your college debt and everything else?
You know, I think the part that I love best, Greg, is the pronunciation of barista.
A little disdain.
I mean, she really sounds like it's some sort of exotic Italian phrase. If you're one, you can almost see the air quotes. If you're one of these baristas. So here's the thing, Greg, maybe a lot of listeners will disagree with me. I've never felt so close to Hillary Clinton in my life. I think her assessment of the Bernie crowd is pretty accurate. And, you know, you can't sue someone for libel when truth is a defense. So, you know, complaining that, you know, I think that they're the lament, her description, her assessment of the lament of the Bernie crowd is reasonably accurate, at least the young Bernie crowd. The idea of these, you know, millennials who believe that, you know, they got sold a false bill of goods and the job market is not what they expected, and they had plans for their life, and reality is not cooperating. At no point does anyone mention maybe you didn't need that degree in basket weaving, maybe you didn't need that, you know, existential philosophy degrees and stuff like that. Maybe you could have or should have learned a skill, and that might have actually done you more good than getting a tons into debt and all of that. So I actually think this is actually fortuitous timing for her. I think it does, however, in the sense that deep down, do we think when she promises free college education for everybody, now we know this is her 47%, you know, moment. She thinks this is all a bunch of crap. She thinks this is all a bunch of ridiculous hippy dippy happy talk, and it's ridiculous to expect the United States to become Scandinavia. It probably further fills the argument that she's completely inauthentic and she's willing to tell everyone what they want to hear, that she has no core beliefs beyond her own ambition. But, you know, I'm going to applaud Hillary's skeptical assessment of those baristas and all those people who have unrealistic expectations of life. And I think ultimately, you know, deep down, you almost wonder if you really pushed Hillary whether she would say these people are responsible for their own decisions. But at that point, you stop being a Democrat entirely. So.
Wow. So Hillary will say anything to get elected president, and sometimes she might even use actual facts.
She might even be right. It's kind of, you know, if you have enough monkeys typing on a typewriter for long enough, they get something right. Sooner or later, Hillary's supreme cynicism will actually end up getting an accurate assessment of what it is there. So there you go.
All right. On to the other controversies of the weekend. We'll get to Trump taxes a little bit. But in addition to that issue, as we enter martini number two, Rudy Giuliani making the rounds on the Sunday morning shows, talking mostly about taxes, but also in his appearance on Meet the Press, he was asked about his role as an attack dog to some extent, about how Hillary Clinton responded to Bill Clinton's sex scandals and allegations made by women that he harassed them or even raped them in the case of Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, of course, Paula Jones. And then, of course, there were the consensual relationships, I guess, which would include Monica Lewinsky. So Chuck Todd over at NBC was trying to challenge Rudy about whether Hillary actually acted wrongly there. And we somehow ended up with this exchange.
So she was wrong to stand by her husband?
No, she was wrong to attack the victim. The woman.
Are you the right person to level this charge?
Yeah, I'm the right person to level this charge because I've never made such a charge, and I prosecuted people who committed rape.
But your past, you have your own infidelity, sir.
Well, everybody does, and I'm a Roman Catholic, and I confess those things to my priest. But I've never ever attacked someone who's been the victim of sexual abuse.
Jim, lost in there probably is a fair critique of Hillary Clinton demonizing publicly the women who have alleged harassment or relationships with her husband. But Rudy Giuliani, just matter-of-factly, can't imagine what circles he's running in. Yeah, infidelities. Yeah, we all have that. So we just confess it and move on. So confession, obviously, after sin is good. But the assumption that we all have cheated on our spouses, no.
You know, this is one of those moments where you compounded upon another bad statement. It just turns into a Dagwood sandwich of bad statements. And among them, when people talk about the Clinton scandals, people kind of lump Monica Lewinsky in with Kathleen Willey, and they really shouldn't. Like, those are really different standards of behavior. Monica Lewinsky was a consensual affair. Now, it might have been really sleazy, might have been really morally repugnant. A lot of people may have felt that the president of the United States, Bill Clinton, was taking advantage of her, that even if she was a grown woman, it's not surprising for an intern to be starstruck by the president of the United States. And we don't put you in the Oval Office so that you can bang the intern pool, even if John F. Kennedy did the same thing to a 19-year-old. Kathleen Willey was a rape allegation, right? No argument of consent, no affair, none of that kind of stuff. Paula Jones was kind of in the middle, alleging a sexual harassment. Jennifer Flowers was a case of alleged affair, but also the idea in each one of these cases, Bill Clinton was going to use his power and authority as governor to help these women get jobs and promote them. Certainly the implication of all the encounters was cooperating with Bill would help you and not cooperating would be. And I don't like the way Chuck Todd says, you've had your own indiscretions. Well, okay, I don't think affairs are not the same as rape and we shouldn't treat them that way. And then secondly, Giuliani's like, we all do it. Which kind of completely undermines his argument against that. And I think that, you know, it would have been better if Giuliani had made that distinction upon that. And then the other thing, which I don't know if he got into that, you know, we emphasized enough in that in interview with Chuck Todd, if you're going to make the argument, if you're going to bring up Bill's affairs in the context of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, you can't just bring them up and say, see, aren't they terrible? Because then people will say, oh, you're blaming Hillary for what Bill did. What Hillary is responsible for is that in each one of these cases, she went out and she called the woman a liar. In every single one of those cases, now, she may have known, she may not have known. Greg, I'm old enough to remember that in the peak of the Lewinsky scandal, Bill Clinton's staff was leaking to the press that, of course, Hillary knew that about the affair before his televised confession in August. And Hillary Clinton's people were spinning, no, of course she didn't know that he had actually had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. You know, one of those rare moments where you see the White House, the president's press people and the first lady's press people effectively going to war. in these circumstances, first you can argue the question, do we really want to put these people back in the White House? Do we remember this atmosphere of constant scandal and corruption and dishonesty that they always seem to bring with themselves? But Hillary Clinton, as much as it is a rotten thing for Bill Clinton to have affairs against, you know, behind her back, it is, you know, if not as rotten, then comparably rotten for her to jump in and to smear these women when they were telling the truth. And that's what gets at the core of this. Now, I don't know if Giuliani got enough time in that interview to get into that. And undoubtedly, he is the wrong, probably the imperfect messenger for that. This is a good moment for Kellyanne Conway, right? As far as we know. But I kind of have this feeling that this, you know, this is a legitimate argument to be made against Hillary, and it's being undermined by the clumsiness of it from Trump surrogates who are being sent out there.
All right, let's stick with Rudy and Chuck Todd, as a matter of fact, and move on to issue number three, and that is that the New York Times was able to get access to a few pages of Donald Trump's tax returns from the mid-1990s. How they got them is still being investigated, and it could potentially be a violation of the law, but we don't know that yet. Basically, what we've learned is that Trump reported a massive loss, I think in 1995, to the tune of almost $916 million. And subsequently, over the next 18 years, it would appear that he essentially did not end up paying federal income taxes because he spread those losses out over those years. And here's Rudy Giuliani's explanation of that on Meet the Press.
I mean, the reality is he's a genius. What he did was he took advantage of something that could save his enterprise, and he did something we admire in America. He came back.
I'm not sure genius is the right word here, Jim. It's a fairly common tactic. I know people in the financial planning and, you know, folks did this after the 2008 downturn as well, reporting losses that ended up extending on their taxes over a number of years. The main difference is, of course, that most of us don't report $900 million losses, but I think people pretty much know Trump is rich. Here's the other odd part, though. This is kind of almost a two-pronged third martini. Is the number of people left and right who are appalled that even though this was legal, that Trump did this. First of all, here's Chuck Todd.
You think it's a good example to avoid, to basically being able to avoid paying federal taxes, to take advantage of loopholes where somebody wealthy can avoid paying actual federal taxes. I understand that it's legal, and we're debating whether it should be. But is this the right thing we should have in a president?
And then you go to Hillary at the debate when she suspected that Trump hadn't paid taxes. She says, if you have paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets, zero for schools or health. And then here's Mark Cuban, the ultimate troll for 2016, commenting on CNN.
He doesn't say this is a mistake, Mark. He says that this is a brilliant strategy. So
no,
he was
didn't. Everybody around him did, right? He just, well, he says he makes it smart for not paying taxes.
Yeah.
And that's just wrong. Yeah, that's just wrong. Like I say it all the time, after military service, the most patriotic thing you can do as a wealthy person is pay your taxes, because that keeps the roads paved, the military paid, you know, and kids going to school. And he obviously doesn't understand that concept.
And, Jim, you even have some Republicans saying those 18 years of taxes, that could have helped for child care, infrastructure, defense. So, you know, there's a lot we don't know here. These are three pages from one return 21 years ago. So nobody's saying Trump is a choir boy, and I'm sure he's not. But the idea that somehow you're not supposed to take advantage of the tax code when it can benefit you in a situation is also absurd.
There's a lot to unpack here, Greg.
Yes.
Let me kind of work backwards there. Don't oversell it, guys. Don't tell me this is genius. Don't tell me that he's a master of, you know, first of all, do I think Trump knows a bit about the tax code? Sure. But he's got a lot of accountants. He's got a lot of lawyers. Let's, you know, it's not like, you know, Trump suddenly said, I've got a great idea. You know, secondly, to do this. And here's the other thing. The other thing is, you know, Trump, I very much believe that Trump has probably paid every penny he has owed over the last 20 years and probably his entire life. And I say that based on the idea that, Greg, if he had not, don't you think the IRS would have gone after him with relish by now?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about just having a great big target on his behind. That probably would be actually represent that. So I think if Trump had committed tax fraud, I think it's extremely likely that the IRS would have caught it by now. So what he's doing is legal. I'm glad to see Chuck Todd is granting that point. The obvious knock on people is, let's see your tax returns, Chuck Todd. I mean, we all get deductions for charitable donations. You know, so if your income is high enough, do you take a deduction for home mortgage interest? You know, there are deductions out there. By golly, I'm going to take them if I'm entitled to them. And I don't think that's, you know, most, very few people think that's wrong. or more specifically, very few people think it's wrong when they do it. They do think it's wrong when other people do it. It's no one's complaining about Bill Clinton taking a deduction on donating his used underwear to charity back in the – it was either late 80s or early 90s. Do you remember how I think it was our Tim Geithner, our former Treasury Secretary. Remember he tried to deduct summer camp as a child care cost? Right? Oh, yeah, you can deduct that, right? No? No, okay, so – life is full of the recent history is littered with these kind of implausible deductions and, oh yeah, I totally, needed that for business, things like that. I saw a headline, I think it was from MSNBC said how, it was from the New York Times, how Donald Trump turned the tax code into a giant tax shelter. You know, Greg, it's really amazing Trump could do all that with no role in writing any of it. He didn't turn it in, it's just there the way it is. And he and his accountants and he and his lawyers looked at this and said, all right, how can we minimize our tax payments? I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. Now, you could argue, should the tax code be written like this? And I think we can have that argument. I think most of us would say, okay, if you can take enough of a loss that you don't pay taxes for the better part of 20 years, then yeah, okay, that's something that looks, strikes if you and still live the ostentatiously wealthy lifestyle. That Donald Trump pays and pay no federal income taxes and perhaps no state income taxes. Most of us say, all right, that's a good argument for tax simplification, which Republicans have been arguing for the past couple decades. But hey. The other thing, I just want to one last point on Mark Cuban's argument that paying taxes is the most patriotic thing you can do. Greg, don't you think patriotism should be a choice?
I was going to say it should be optional then, right?
Right. I mean, isn't, don't we think of, that's kind of like saying breathing is patriotic because you're choosing to return carbon dioxide to America's trees, I mean, paying tax, I guess technically I have the option of not paying taxes if I don't mind going to jail. Right. But there's a part of me that feels like patriotism, love of your country should be something you do as a conscious choice, not something you do either involuntarily or to avoid terrible consequences. So I don't think I buy this whole argument. I mean, every time you hear, every day on tax day, there's at least one columnist who says, I'm proud to pay my taxes. My taxes pay for schools. My taxes pay. Yeah, but you know what else? Your taxes also pay for the IRS agents who decided to target Tea Party groups, right? Read the Weed Agency for all the wonderful ways your tax dollars have been spent all these years. If there's ever been a government policy that bothers you, if you feel like prosecutors unfairly affect people, guess what? Unfairly target people, that's your tax dollars at work. If you feel like military spending, if you're opposed to wars, well, you know what? That's your tax dollars at work too, right? Government spends a lot of stuff. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. Those of us who gripe about our taxes generally would like government to be more efficient with it, be more careful with it, spend more on the good stuff and less on the bad stuff. And because of this, we're seen as being these crazed anarchists frothing at the mouth who don't want any government spending. That's not what we stand for, and it's never been what we stood for. But anyway, we're now far down the rabbit hole, Greg, and I think I'll just kind of leave it there. But so no, Mark Cuban, I don't think you deserve a gold star in the patriotism department for choosing to do what everybody else is legally required to do as well.
Thank you. Your rant was way better than mine would have been. So maybe we can earmark it. We can just send our tax dollars to the things we want to pay
for.
There
you go. Yeah.
That'd be a fun way of reforming the system. Jim, on that note, we'll call time for today. Have a good one.
See you soon, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.